Okay.
For me.
Okay.
For you.
The festival.
Should we do it? The festival at Sandpoint is
July 30th through August 9th.
And we're talking to three members of the staff. Again, we're here in the studio with Veronica Knowlton, Director of Operations and Programs, Paul Gunter, Production and Education Manager, and Caroline Hawkins, who's Director of Community and Strategy. And Caroline, you're the newest full-time employee at the festival, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep, I am. I am just under a month old.
Well, how's it been?
Grow up so fast.
Yeah, how's month one?
It's been great. It's been fantastic. It's been a lot of learning and kind of seeing. I was here previously in 2015 to 2022, and so seeing all of the work that's been put in the past few years that I was gone it's been really rewarding to see, and I love it.
Mm-hmm. We don't have to ask you how do you like Sandpoint or anything like that. You grew up here.
Yes.
You're a local.
I love Sandpoint.
Okay. Well, should we? You guys were kind enough to send out to your extensive mailing list a request for questions from the people who go to the festival and people who support the festival, and we've got listener questions here as well as our own questions that Jim and I will formulate, and some that I think you would like to be asked. Should we start with a listener question? Maybe.
I think we should.
Okay, here we go. I'm starting with a question from Sarah. Can I bring my own food? Asks Sarah. Paul?
Thank you for asking, Sarah. That's a great question. And the answer is absolutely yes. You can bring your own food to the venue.
Okay.
You cannot bring your own liquids, however. That's a big change.
Even bottles of water?
Correct. We have water filling stations inside the venue, free stations, two of them, one to the north, one to the south. Also, various drinks for purchase once you're inside.
Okay.
But you can bring empty
up containers. To 32 ounces. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
32 ounces. But you can bring in your own food.
Okay.
Yeah. You want to make a little charcuterie?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Bring in some artichoke hearts.
Okay. Well, there you go.
Just drain the liquid first.
I just wanted to kick things off by kind of establishing the format of the show here, that we do have questions from listeners, which I always think is fun. Sorry, I'm going to turn off the phone so you can't call in. Did somebody try to call in? I don't know. I thought I saw the light up a second ago.
Okay, just ask.
But we have a bunch of questions that have been emailed in, and I suppose you can always email the festival if you have specific questions, right? It's info@festivalatsandpoint.com.
Yes. And I'm online with our office, so if you want to email something, feel free to do it.
Oh,
Is there a phone number?
Real time.
We've got an operator standing
email.
By.
Just
okay.
email.
Oh, cool. All right. So email your questions in there, and we can hopefully get them on the air. Okay. I'm going to start with the icebreaker, though. What was the first concert you ever attended?
Ever?
Paul?
Ever?
Ever. Oh, yeah. Jim, what was the first concert you ever attended?
Oh, Peter, Paul, and Mary in 1962.
All right.
Out at the Stepan Center at University of Notre Dame.
Okay. Very nice.
It was wonderful, and I was young then.
Mm-hmm. Paul?
The first concert that I really remember was Bill Monroe.
And the Bluegrass Boys.
Wow. And the Bluegrass Boys.
Yahoo!
At the Bonner County Fairgrounds, and I was probably four.
And what's your memory of that?
I have a quarter that he gave me after the show.
No.
And a poster from the show. My dad was involved through KPND, through the radio station.
Right.
And they put on the show out at the fairgrounds. And so we got to meet him afterwards, and I told him that I played guitar, and I had a little Muppet Babies plastic guitar that I brought everywhere. And he gave me a quarter and told me, never give up, kid. And he was probably, he had to be...
Old
at that point.
You bet.
Yeah, because he was born.
You still have the quarter?
Still have the quarter, still have the poster.
Oh, is that way too cool?
Yeah. But that's the first one that I remember going to and being like, whoa, that's a whole concert.
Caroline, do you remember your first concert?
I probably don't remember my very first concert, but the one that really stands out to me is Michael Franti in 2014.
Spearhead.
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. It was my first concert at the festival, and it was the first one that I got to go and run off with some friends at the festival, and my parents were on their blanket, and so I think that that's close to one of my firsts. I know there's been probably a few that I was maybe too young for.
Mm-hmm. High energy concert, wasn't it?
High energy, yep. It was a really fun one to see. I had these big eyes like, whoa, I didn't realize that adults did all this. So, it was great though.
Okay, Veronica, what was yours?
Tina Turner.
Whoa. No way. Yes.
What? I was maybe 5. My mom took me to see Tina Turner. My mom is a huge fan. And I have a confession. My most prominent memory was that was my first time drinking soda. And all I remember was Sprite was so spicy. It was terrible. I struggled to drink this soda that I begged my mom for. That was my most prominent memory. But yeah, Tina Turner.
Did she do Proud Mary?
No idea.
Oh, you don't remember anything. All you remember is
Tina Turner. Sprite bubbles in my nose. Yeah. I don't remember the set list. It was...
Jack
scene.
I don't know. I don't remember. I must have seen concerts beforehand. I remember going to the one that sticks out in my memory isn't until I was in high school when I saw Springsteen. I went and saw Bruce Springsteen play with REM.
Whoa.
Yeah, it was very cool. It was a great one. We had good seats and everything, and that it sticks out to me just because I think I had been to concerts before. And this was the first time that it was almost, it's that kind of
what was
religious
the
experience. The XL Energy Center in St. Paul, Minnesota, I believe. Mm-hmm. The
XL Energy.
It's where the hockey team plays. Yeah, it was a big show. Very cool. It was very, the first time I'd seen like a big act like that, and where it kind of is, I'd heard Bruce Springsteen's music on the radio before, but I had never
then you're
been
in an arena with 25,000 people.
It had never been fun. Yeah, exactly. I would say I was a casual listener before, and then I was immediately like, "Well, this is the greatest artist of all time. This is it."
That's why you have the back tattoo. This all makes sense.
Yeah, that's right.
Got it. Yep.
I thought
it was weird that it was Bruce and Michael Stipe, but now I get the connection. Yeah,
that's right. Mm-hmm. I'll tell the story of that of my experience there some other time, because we got to get to the meat here. We got to start talking about what goes on at the festival. Jim, I think you mentioned earlier. I mean, where are we now?
The festival is what, about a month away?
Yeah, I realized yesterday that we're about 30 days from beginning our lease at Memorial Field. It takes about a week to build the venue.
Okay.
And so yesterday I had a bit of a panic attack.
Okay, so less than a month away you begin setting up roots at the...
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
And so where is the festival now? I mean, a month out, what are, besides, you know, making sure that you can get stuff up a week ahead of time... What else is on your plate?
We're in the process, about 30 days out, we're in the process of confirming all of our rental reservations. So we have about 15 outside vendors that we contract different things with.
Okay.
Anything from a stage to heavy equipment to...
Bottled water.
That's one of them.
Porta potties.
So we're confirming all of our reservations that we made anywhere from January to March, just making sure we're still on the calendar.
And does that go smoothly? I mean, or does somebody say, oh... All of our porta-potties are rented out.
Well,
sorry.
There's a reason that I confirm everything 30 days out.
Wise. you don't want to give up bottles of water without the porta-potties.
Correct. We're in the process of finalizing all of our staffing. So whether you're a volunteer or a security guard or a member of our production crew, we like to finalize all of our shifts about 30 days out, giving people... notice to plan their summer and what to expect in terms of hourly commitment with us. What else are we doing?
Anything with the artists themselves?
Yeah, so about 30 days out, Paul starts getting involved with tour managers, and I'll let him kind of explain the whole what's
the
in.
Whole process. There used to start a lot earlier for us. We would start advancing the production side of things usually in March or April.
Okay,
but now. It's 30 days. If you send an email to somebody before that, you'll never hear from them. And we're, in the last several years, we've updated a lot of things at our venue in terms of the stage we use, PA system and lighting and things. So the advanced process there for the tech side goes a lot smoother. We also, through the way we book our shows now, we have better communication on the front end. So they have a better idea of what they're coming into as well. So usually it's just a quick conversation, maybe three emails back and forth about what they're bringing, what we're bringing, how many people they need at what time to get all of their heavy things onto a stage. And then the real action happens the week before and then the day of whatever show it is. Depending on whether they're flying in or whether they're driving and bringing their own gear, kind of changes what we do day to day. And then like our grand finale show where we have the symphony and we do a movie in concert, that's totally different from everything else. So
how challenging is it to have different performers back to back to back? Like one might say, oh, no blue lights on me. You know, I mean, you know, something like that, all the details. Is that go fairly smoothly, or are there any monkey wrenches along the way?
Every once in a while, something happens, but overall, it goes very smooth. We've had the same production team for the festival since its inception, I guess, technically. Mm-hmm. But probably the fourth year of the festival, when we had an actual stage and some lighting, which I think was a total of 8 lights in its entirety, to light up the music stands for the orchestra. Silhouette Lighting out of Spokane, which now through many iterations is VIP Productions Northwest. They still do all of our lighting and sound production. So they've been with us forever, and the techs that come up now have been with us, all of them, for 5 or more years.
So who do they work with? Do they work with the performers, the managers themselves, or do you tell them, okay, this group wants X, this group wants...
That's how it starts. We go through all the paperwork kind of together and figure out if there's anything out of the ordinary or anything that we need to bring in from another vendor in Spokane or Seattle. Depending on the request, sometimes it's easy. Sometimes it's a piece of gear, some weird vintage thing that we can't find. We were just talking about him yesterday. Who was that? Violent Femmes. They own 2 of, like, the only 12 contrabass saxophones on the entire planet,
Earth. In the world.
And they were asking if we had one available as a backup. And I was like, no, how do you even find one? Like, no, that's all right. We'll bring one of ours.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah.
Fair enough.
That. We don't know where to find one of those. If you need a keyboard, sure, we got you covered. Drum set all day long. But every once in a while, there's a weird request that we have to go find somewhere, or... we just figure out what actually works for our day and and make it happen.
So otherwise, when do you finally relax after you get all these different moving parts, you know?
Once I see a bus and a truck roll onto the venue, that's usually when I relax a little bit.
Okay.
Really?
Because they finally made it there.
I was not expecting that answer.
What were you expecting, Veronica?
August 15th.
That's the big relax.
Yeah, that's the capitalized relax in big letters.
And we've been lucky weather-wise for a long time at the festival. Yeah. There have been a few. Yeah, we're all knocking on things in here.
Yeah.
There have been a few occasions where we've delayed shows or evacuated and canceled shows. Or artists have canceled and we've had to rebook a show.
Katie Lang. Didn't she cancel and Emmylou Harris took her place?
Oh, I forgot about that one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That was 8, 10 years ago, mm-hmm. something like that.
That was a long time ago. I think like 18 years ago.
Yeah.
We had REO Speedwagon the first time that they were going to be here. It was a COVID cancellation and we had the Village People.
How difficult
is it? That was one of my favorites.
That's got to be one of the nightmares. Somebody gets a cold or somebody falls off a stage.
So last year, Colby Calais was supposed to perform with Gavin DeGraw, and he canceled, I believe, 24 hours prior. And so our first call was to Colby Calais' team, and she very graciously agreed to extend her set. So... There, there. That was a very okay. easy, low-hanging fruit fix.
Mm-hmm. They were sharing the same band yes. as a double bill.
Perfect.
And so
perfect.
It was an easy fix.
She extended her set, but sometimes...
But we found out as the opener for our band was on stage that night, the night before.
Mm-hmm. The timing of it wasn't great. But sometimes, so if I'm going to pick on this Colby Calais example... Sometimes her manager, like if she's canceling, her manager might come up with a solution already and say, hey, this artist has to cancel. I have another on my roster in the area. Can you plug them in?
Okay.
That's best case scenario.
Sure.
Less than best case scenario is we just put out feelers to all of our agent list and is anybody in the area in the next 24, 48 hours? And we've been very fortunate to get some bites and hits.
People are fairly cooperative, aren't they?
Yeah, I think everybody understands that we're here to have a good time. Like I like to say all the time, we're not curing cancer. And so I think everybody from artists, agents to our staff is very understanding of like, this is show business. Show must go on. We're all here to find a solution.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I remember back in the late 70s, I caught a Jimmy Buffett concert with the Asleep at the Wheel. And I guess the lead singer for Asleep at the Wheel got a bug or something. Mm-hmm. So instead of finding someone else, Jimmy Buffett came out with just a guitar without his band. And
perfect.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So, okay, we have the lighting and the sound. What next do we concern ourselves about?
The thing we actually talk about the most is backstage hospitality.
Ah, the green room.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that has the most conversations.
Okay,
out of anything.
How does that go?
I don't do most of them anymore, so it goes great for me. It's fantastic.
I guess it depends on the day, to be very candid. 80% of the time, it goes extremely well. What I have found is most tour managers are extremely organized and communicative in terms of what their teams need and expect. Sometimes needs are very different than expectations, and that's where the trouble lies. Usually it's understanding dietary preferences, any allergies, what type of food are they expecting. We have a great on-site caterer who does lunch and dinner. If they're not showing up till 11, no need for breakfast. Sometimes they're there at 5 a.m.
and we need
burritos and yogurt and a full coffee stand. And so it just really depends on what the tour manager wants the artist's day to look like. And then we try to meet those needs through our hospitality team.
Hmm. Okay, that brings up a couple questions for me. Do you have any arrangements with local businesses or anything like, stand by, we're first priority for the first dozen breakfast burritos coming out of the kitchen this morning.
Yes, shout out to Joel's.
Yeah.
We have a text line with Joel's for breakfast burritos. They're phenomenal to work with.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was guessing. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you're the backstage, I don't know how I've never really observed this. I've never gone looking when I'm at other venues elsewhere. So the festival at Sandpoint has no real indoor backstage at all. It's all in people's trailers.
Correct.
Is that unusual or is that a normal thing for these bands to always be on their in a trailer?
I'd say it's not normal, but it's not obscure. Performing at an outdoor venue, especially in the summertime, I think when they roll on site, they're like, oh yeah, whatever.
Okay, people are kind of used to this.
Correct. Yeah. And Paul and I and our programming manager, Madison, keep the space impeccably clean, very organized. We have plants. We have cute little market lights. It's a very unsterile space. We have a cute little artist patio. And so we really try to make it as welcoming as possible because they're on the road like 300 days out of the year. And so we want to really make it as homey for them as possible.
Yeah.
And also you want to make it so positive because I'm sure artists and managers talk to each other.
Absolutely.
You know, and that, hey, you're looking for a place in early August.
Absolutely.
You know, that word of mouth gets around, I'm quite sure.
It's a very small world in the entertainment space.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do people ever stay longer? Do people ever come and stay for a week or something like that? And do you have to arrange for, or are you involved in arranging for lodging?
We are not involved in lodging.
But sometimes we end up involved in
launches. We do our best.
2 years ago, who was it? Mount Joy.
Yes, they came. Thank you.
And they were going to go stay in Nebraska or something for a week before the next part of their tour. Okay, that was somewhere super weird. Kansas, maybe. I don't remember what it was. And they decided they were going to stay in Sandpoint for one more night. And Heather Peterson put them up at Talus Rock.
Okay.
And then they ended up staying there for the week.
Yeah. About a week, I think.
They wrote part of their next album up there. They had just had the whole space, ended up staying in Sandpoint instead of going to, Arkansas, or wherever it was. Yeah, right.
No disrespect to Arkansas.
Mm-hmm. Not at all. No, love the place.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Bill Clinton. people have come early to stay because they've heard about Sandpoint, so they've planned their days off to be here or days off afterwards. A lot of times it coincides with a border crossing, so they end up with a day on either side anyways coming to or from Canada. Because things on this side of the country are a lot farther apart. They drive a lot more on a tour. So
Hey, you're listening to The Morning Show here on KRFY, and we're in conversation with folks from the festival at Sandpoint, kind of going behind the scenes of this year's festival and the usual festival in general. The festival at Sandpoint is from July 30th to August 9th this year. And our guests are Veronica Knowlton, Director of Operations and Programs, Paul Gunter, Production and Education Manager, and Caroline Hawkins, Director of Community and Strategy.
Should we take a music break and then come back and ask some more questions and answers?
If you like.
This is a stumper for Paul.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. On this date in 1969, I think that's pre-you.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Okay.
Yep.
Not pre-me.
Negative 14.
And the Hollies did a song called He Ain't Heavy, He's My Brother.
Mm-hmm.
And the little bit of trivia is
I'm going to tell you, I think you shouldn't say the name.
Oh, guess. Okay.
Yeah.
There is a studio musician who plays on this song, who later on will become quite knowable. Okay? That's all I'll say. So here's the Hollies. On this date, they recorded this song, the British group, June 25th, 1969.
The road is long, with a many a winding tongue that leads us to who knows where, who knows where. But I'm strong.
Okay, that is the Hollies with He Ain't Heavy, He's My Brother. That was recorded on this date in 1969. And the secret studio musician, ta-da, Paul, nailed it.
Our boy Reggie.
Yep, Reginald Dwight, who later on, a couple years later, will become Elton John. And I do not know enough about his history to know when he changed his name.
We'll have to figure out that one for the next show, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
I believe it's Sir Elton John.
He is Sir now.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
When you talk to me, say Sir.
Paul got that within a minute of the song.
After he dismissed the harmonica part,
It was the piano player. I'd be curious to know if any of our other, if our listeners out there were able to identify that.
But you can hear Graham Nash.
Mm-hmm.
Who was here at the Panada, three, four years ago, maybe?
Mm-hmm. Graham Nash is about the only thing I know about the Hollies.
The Hollies, Mm-hmm. And Bus Stop Wendy.
Yeah. And long, cool woman in a black dress, right? We got the festival folks here with us. The Festival at Sandpoint, which is a nonprofit organization that puts on a 2-week concert experience in Sandpoint at the end of July and the beginning of August. This year, from the 30th of July to the 9th of August, among their staff are Veronica Knowlton, Director of Operations and Programs, Paul Gunter, Production and Education Manager, and Caroline Hawkins, Director of Community and strategy. And all three of those folks are here in the studio with us on the morning show right now. And we are talking a little bit behind the scenes at the festival. And let's bring Caroline into the conversation a little bit.
Ta-da!
Let's see. So you are, your personal history, you were involved, you've only worked there for a month now in your current stint, your current
but not new at all.
But you're not new. You were...
Okay, pull yourself out of that one, Jen. Yeah, okay. She's not new, but she's only been here a month.
Yeah.
What's that math?
Hold on.
You were here before.
Girl math.
You were here before. Were you not?
Yes. Yeah, I started actually in 2014 as a volunteer in the box office.
Right.
And then my sister pulled me into an internship in 2015. And then I worked there until about 2022 in a variety of roles. And then I moved down to Boise and did a few venues down there and moved back just recently. So, yes, kind of new, kind of old.
Mm-hmm.
It's up in the air.
Anything changed in Sandpoint since you were gone? We got paid parking now.
We have paid parking, yes.
Actually, not quite. Yeah. Next week.
No, yeah. I laugh because Sienna, one of our coworkers, she said, well, you have to talk to Caroline in old Sandpoint terms. Because they were trying to describe where a company was, and I was like, Where is that? And then they mentioned, oh, well, it's right next to the bank. And I was like, what's that? They said, by the old Starbucks. Oh, I get it. So definitely a lot of changes, a lot of growth, and all of the new businesses are super fun to see, and there's just a lot going on.
What do you call the hardware store down there on 3rd?
I call that Ace.
Okay. Not Merwin's.
Not Merwin's.
Okay, just checking.
That was
that can date you. You can what you call that hardware store, I think, is a good way of gauging when somebody arrived.
Yep.
And do you say down by Spuds or down by the old KFC? That's what you really know.
Yeah.
Old Sandpoint.
Let's see.
Well, Harold's IGA is not just a band.
Yep.
I know.
Well, let's see. Should we talk about? Talk about kind of the history of the festival, or what is your role now as the director of community and strategy? How do you see yourself kind of involving the community in the festival?
I see myself as more of a liaison between the festival and the community, and making sure that the community's voice is really prominent in our strategic planning, and that can evolve from businesses to individuals to donors to volunteers. Just making sure that the community has a presence in the organization that it's kind of helped build and support over the years.
Are you the person that people talk to first when they approach the festival, or do you go out and seek community members for input, or both of those?
A little bit of both. I've been having a lot of fun getting out into the community and seeking out that feedback. And then it's also been coming to me as well, which is, I love both forms, but I definitely love going out to other businesses and seeing how we can collaborate and kind of work together to make something really fun for all of the members for both of our teams.
What kind of feedback have you gotten in this month from the community? What do you hear most?
This month, I've been hearing a lot about just our education program expanding. I think it's become such a big operation thanks to Paul and this team. We have expanded so much in our education, and it really feels like it's been truly seen and felt by the community, whether it's their kid in the program or they just have worked with the program and stuff. So,
now, can we take a moment and shine a spotlight on that part of the festival at Sandpoint? Because we have a tendency to think of, oh, just this block of concerts and they're done for the rest of the year. But I think what mainly spearheaded by Paul as education manager, can you talk a little bit about the ongoing throughout the year, what you do?
Yeah, we do a lot of things in the education realm year-round. A lot of it is specific to the greater school year schedule, just as things line up. But we have a pre-K outreach program that we started piloting in 2022, in the spring, I think, at the end of the 21-22 school year. As we noticed, and as I had kids that age and then started to look at daycares and preschools and things and realized that none of them had a regular music program.
Music component.
And then realized that wasn't just specific to our schools in Sandpoint or Bonner County or Idaho. That's kind of a national trend. Some private schools have other options depending on what the focus of that school is. But the greater gap for us was that pre-K range. So we started an outreach program with some 4 and 6 week music programs where we would go into the school and do like a percussion-based program for 6 weeks. And you can have kids in that amount of time playing different three-part things and do a little assembly. And it was met with a great response.
I bet you the kids love it.
The kids love it. I got to get out of the office and go play music. Like, it was a blast for everybody. The teachers loved it. So we started expanding a little bit more and offering some other programs to schools. And through budgeting and scraping by on some other things for that first year, we were able to keep all those programs free when we went out. And that became the biggest focus from our staff and our board, and is the continued focus, which is really nice, is to find a way to keep all of these programs that we do free for the community and free for the students.
Excellent. Excellent.
Mm-hmm. So when people buy tickets to the festival, they're supporting the, I mean, they're local. keeping the mm-hmm. local education going, I guess. Mm-hmm. Local music education going. That's kind of where I suppose the money has to go to upkeep and operations, but then, yeah.
Any of our programs from our pre-K mm-hmm. outreach, we have an instrument library that we do rentals through, beginning band and symphonic instruments. That's a free program. We hold a deposit while the instrument is out, but there's not a monthly rental fee for those.
Mm-hmm.
We do master classes with middle school and high school students where we bring in other teachers from around the region and have some days that are focused just on their instruments where they get to work with some people outside of their day-to-day band classes. Our scholarship program that we do every spring for high school students for our songwriting scholarship, the Charlie Packard Memorial Scholarship, our instrumental scholarship. We have a vocalist scholarship as well, and we're partnering with the Knickerbocker Foundation for a music appreciation scholarship that they're funding for us.
Hmm. They just won the championship, didn't they? The Knickerbockers? No.
I think so.
Yeah, I think so. They beat the Spurs. Anyway.
We're talking professional basketball.
Yeah.
The New York Knicks.
New York Knicks and the San Antonio Spurs.
I needed a blinker for that lane change. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
It was quick.
Yeah. Let's see. Okay. I don't want to get to these listener questions yet. Our time grows short. I have a line of questioning I'd like to start off on here. The changing music industry, which I think is where last time we had Veronica in the studio, after we turned off the mics, this was kind of where this whole idea of having a behind the scenes show started, was just because we were asking off air, how are things changing in the music industry, or how are the changes in the music industry affecting the festival locally? Because it's a rapidly changing industry. You've been there for 3 years, 4 years,
three years, 4 seasons, but 3 calendar years.
Yeah. Is everything the same as it was 4 years ago for you?
It is not the same, and it is the same.
Mm-hmm.
What's the best way? So when I started, I was a volunteer in 2022. Right after COVID, ticket sales, you just were selling tickets left and right. The artists were super excited to be back on the road. It was fun. It was fast. It was furious. Mm-hmm. 23 and a little bit of 24 echoed the same sentiments coming out of COVID. 24, we started to see ticket purchasers purchasing later, and artist teams were kind of starting to understand their negotiating power and not confirming shows as quickly. And so one of the questions we get frequently is, well, why isn't your lineup announced yet? And we cannot announce shows until, number one, the artist confirms, and then number two, the artist tells us when we can go public with that information. And so 24, we started to see a lot later confirmation from artist teams on the offers we had had out. 25 was even a slower booking season in terms of management teams wanting to see if they could get a better offer or different routing. And then 26, this booking season was a real test of determination and grit. I have to give a huge shout out to our programming manager, Madison. She sent out, I believe, over 90 offers this year for 7 shows, which is statistically the most offers we've ever sent out to fill our dates. And so artist teams are just a lot more reluctant. Purchasing behavior has also slowed down tremendously. There is a lot of live music opportunities between us, Missoula, Spokane. And then there's a lot of economic uncertainty right now. I'm sure everyone has been very privy to the gas prices in the last 30 days. And so it's hard to justify a $60 to $80 live music ticket when filling up my truck all of a sudden is $80 a week, when usually it's like $50 to $60. So there's been a lot of, those are kind of the high level changes that I've seen over the last 3 years.
Yeah. Big picture, I mean, or long-term pictures of before your time, I mean, it seems to me, I think you could say that when the festival started, touring was a way that artists would promote their, to promote record sales,
yes,
basically. And their main income source was through sales.
Yes.
And in over the course of these 40 years, and really only once streaming came into the picture, that's flipped. And now
yes,
the income source for artists is
touring.
Yeah.
And yes.
And sales just promote the tour.
You nailed it with streaming.
Yeah.
Artists no longer release an album and maybe go on tour. Artists now release the album and have to go on tour to justify some of their annual expenses. And touring's not cheap. You know, when I first started, I was like, oh my God, a $70 ticket? And then once I started working, and each crew has anywhere from, so the artist might have 5 people in the band, so you have 5 band members. You might have 5 on staff for your production manager, your tour manager, all the assistants. Then if you have 3 buses and 1 truck, now you have a driving crew of 4. Plus, as Paul mentioned earlier, a lot of times they will carry their own instruments, lighting, PA. And so now you're in it, equipment plus labor, and it's like, yeah, I can very easily understand how one show is $150,000 in expenses for the artist. It's very expensive.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. Hey, another big business impactor is Live Nation and Ticketmaster.
Oh boy.
Do you does the festival have some overlap with the Live Nation Ticketmaster, who are are they currently in courts fighting
They were found guilty. I don't know if there's been a settlement or a resolution yet. We are not directly involved in Live Nation and Ticketmaster drama. However, we are indirectly involved because we have to compete with Live Nation venues. And so it is very hard when... Is Kettle House dabbling in Live Nation bookings?
That's in Missoula.
Yes. And so we love to route. And routing is basically when you get a venue that's maybe 180 miles to 250 miles away. And you say, hey, you're going to play Boise. You're going to play Sandpoint. Then you're going to play Missoula. It helps knock out 3 calendar dates for the artist team. But if 2 of those dates are Live Nation dates, they expect Live Nation money. And we cannot compete with a Live Nation offer. And so our offers might be $100,000, but if they go play Spokane, which is an AEG, which is a competitor of Live Nation, they could play Spokane for $250,000 because they have the national backing of this conglomerate, whereas we are a nonprofit single source revenue stream. So we're not directly affected, but it is a huge... thought process in who we offer and how much we're able to offer.
Well, it'd be interesting. I mean, now that they've, this is the big year for their, for the court case against Live Nation.
I am not holding my breath.
I think, yeah.
I'll say that on yeah. public radio.
Well, there. I mean, and I. All of this is alleged, but I think the court case also hinged on they were preventing. I mean, it wouldn't affect Sandpoint because there is no Live Nation venue here in town, I suppose. But we might be within the radius that they expect. If you want to play at a Live Nation venue, the artists were generally expected to only play at Live Nation
Correct.
Venues. And so, that was the hinge point of the case.
Yeah, so they would basically go Spokane, Missoula, mm-hmm. and not That's even sad. Entertain offers from us. We do have radius clauses, which states that an artist cannot perform within so many miles for so many calendar days, and that prevents Portugal the Man from playing Spokane on Friday and then Festival on Saturday. Mm-hmm. We don't have the population to support ticket sales for both venues. But yeah, there's plenty of cases where they'll go Spokane, Missoula, and they won't even entertain an offer from us.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting. And next year is going to be interesting as well. See how things change.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything further we want to discuss on along those lines, Jim, before moving on to some...
Yeah, we hardly even touched the two pages of concerns and whatever. I just would like to have the festival come on maybe after, and and talk more about, because, like this whole thing about Live Nation and Ticketmaster, that's just a new playing field
for me. That's a whole hour.
Yeah, that's I'm totally ignorant about that. I just think, you line somebody up and they go on stage and perform.
The ripples of that are so huge. We're seeing things like Watershed that's not happening this year, which is a big impact for touring bands, smaller venues across Washington, Oregon, Idaho, Montana that are closing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But also new things that are popping up in Spokane and other places around that same size. So it's ever-changing, but it's... Yeah, it's tumultuous right now, I feel.
And my notion of the festival at Sandpoint is very narrow. I know very little about what goes on, and that continues to go on throughout the year that are beyond just simply local concerns like ticketing, which is something like, if you're a Live Nation, you can do Spokane and Missoula, but you can't do us. That's... I don't know what that means or how does one work with that. So, I'd love to have you guys come back on and share more information, because I think the more that the community understands what the festival goes through, then, that they can be sometimes a little bit more patient. Like, why can't you get the Rolling Stones? Stuff like that. And I'm still wondering about that myself.
Well, I'll look into it for you.
Call 265-4554 and donate today.
Let's do a quick lightning round of some questions from listeners. Arabarw@yahoo.com asks, how do I get my tickets for the grandstands?
Great question. Our entire venue is general admission, and so you just walk in and choose your seat in the grandstands.
Sarah asks, how does weather affect the show, and what can people expect?
All of our performances are rain or shine. With that being said, we do have some lightning and wind protocols for everyone's safety. And so bring sunscreen, bring an empty water bottle, and be prepared for whatever Sandpoint wants to offer.
And let's hope no smoke.
No smoke.
No smoke.
Okay, here's a little controversy. Okay, Michael wants to know more about how artists are selected and vetted, and I'll fold that right into Anne's question about, I always love to see who you book for the festival. If I don't know the artists, I read up and listen to their music a bit. I did so with Aaron Lewis. My question is, why would you hire someone like Aaron Lewis with a recent controversial background? He's been very political at his concerts. Thanks, says Anne. Any comment on that?
Yes. So first question, how do we book and vet artists? Like I said, we put out 90 offers to fill 7 shows. So it's kind of a game of Tetris meets chess in a weird 3D way. And then secondly, much the same as last year, we had a lot of public commentary about Dispatch and their political stance on stage. We celebrate diversity in all forms. And so while Aaron Lewis might not be your cup of tea, Dispatch was also not some people's cup of tea. And I think Sandpoint's a great place where everyone can come out and enjoy music, find new bands, find bands that maybe don't work for them. That's okay. We have 9 nights of performances, and hopefully there's something for everybody.
Thomas asks, this is, I guess, more of a comment. Will there ever be a country music festival here in North Idaho like Watershed was to Washington? A replacement here in our backyard.
Paul nailed it. You can call our office and offer to underwrite. We would need about $250,000, so we would gladly entertain any conversations with some private funding.
Okay. Let's see. An emailer, ChappyJack16, says, would you consider a ticket poll at live concerts and the winning ticket number can go backstage to meet the band members? That's kind of a question more like, who does get to go backstage?
Yes, so artists sometimes will do meet and greets. It is entirely at the artist's discretion. And so if that is something the artist team wants to host, they can do that and then we facilitate. But we do not tell the artist team
that they have to do it.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Correct.
And Sarah wants to know if you'll be showing How to Train Your Dragon 1. Caroline?
Yes, that will be played at the Bonner Mall Cinema and the Hayden Cinema. And that has some different ticket giveaways associated with it as well for our movie and concert.
Oh, cool. Okay. And then you can go see How to Train Your Dragon 2 at the festival on the 9th.
Live in concert with, once again, the largest orchestra in this organization's history.
Cool.
Only by one person. That's a little gem for our listeners this morning. Okay. But still technically the largest orchestra.
Okay.
One person bigger than How to Train Your Dragon 1, where we set our previous record.
What if somebody gets sick? Are you gonna
Then we'll be tied for the biggest orchestra.
Okay. All right. We got to close out here. What's one thing guests don't see that you're proud of? This is a question for each of you, I think, as far as your work at the festival. Something that guests otherwise would not be aware of, that you're proud of your work.
More times than not, the day after a show, I get a call or text from the production team the day before saying, mm-hmm. thank you for the experience.
Perfect.
Sometimes it's about hospitality. Sometimes it's about a certain person. Lot of times it's about how clean everything is when they show up. Which makes me wonder what other venues these guys are pulling into. Because sometimes I'm like, gosh, that garbage can is full. We look like a bunch of bums. But apparently that's standard at a lot of places. So,
yeah.
Yeah, that's something that a lot of people wouldn't see, wouldn't know about. But the day after thank you is cool.
Mm-hmm. Caroline?
Oh, this is a great question.
New Caroline.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. New Caroline. Mm-hmm. I think that seeing our internship programs go through how they do, a lot of the interns, they transform from wanting to go into a certain role down their life for their career goals, and then they go into the music industry at their internship at the festival, and they completely switch gears, and that is their new passion. Mm. I think that has been one of the coolest things to ever see. And a lot of them do convert. It's a small industry, and we're always excited to get new hands.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Veronica?
I have something similar. I'm really proud of the growth of our production crew over the last 3 years. So three years ago, we started a formal interview process, and I will say that 60% of our production crew are high school students. And so giving them the opportunity to draft their first resume, go through a 15-minute getting-to-know-you interview, and then offering them their first job, I really am proud of the professional development seeds that we're able to plant in such a small town.
Mm-hmm. It's very busy at the festival right now. The last time I was there was 2 days ago? Yesterday?
It was yesterday.
It was yesterday.
Nice.
Yes, at Festival HQ over there on Pine Street. And as you're one of your more frequent visitors during the off season, it's a different vibe right now.
All a lot of high schoolers. 11 people yeah, in there. It's very full. There's metal detectors in the doorway.
Yeah.
There's
the place
tents
is usually
tables all over the place.
Kind of quiet, little music playing, spotless lobby, and not much, you know, it's very comfortable and spacious. And now it is just jam packed with people and gear.
Summer's a different vibe at 525 Pine Street.
Yeah. Hmm. The Festival at Sandpoint tickets are available for the 2026 concert series right now from festivalatsandpoint.com, right? And any other contact information or anything else you want to throw out, anything people should know?
Call Caroline.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, she wants to talk to you.
I want to talk.
She's the community and director of community and strategy, Caroline Hawkins. And our guests this morning have also been Veronica Knowlton, the Director of Operations and Programs, and Paul Gunter, Production and Education Manager. I'm Jack Peterson. That's Jim Healy. This is 88.5 KRFY Ponderé.
Bird Note.
Bird Note comes up next. Thank you, guys.
Thank you guys so much. We'll have you back on again.
This is Bird Note. Tree swallows glisten in the June sunlight. As they swoop and glide, their arcs interlacing in the air. Agile, elegant masters of flight,